It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. That is a cover of Deep River in Ave Maria, stitched seamlessly together by Sista Strings, Milwaukee Roots, siblings uniting their violin, cello, and vocals, blending classical, gospel, and R&B genres. They dropped a new studio album in August called Love is the Only Thing. Concerts in Minneapolis, Madison, and Milwaukee in coming days. And cherry on top, by the way, they play Madison Square Garden with Brandi Carlile later this month. Join in 800-642-1234. Monique and Shante Ross are the duo in Sista Strings, both vocalists and classically trained musicians. Monique plays the cello and Shante leads with violin. Welcome to you both to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And so, you know, your calendar is packed. My goodness, you're out playing shows this week in, you know, Wisconsin, giving a little love to Minneapolis. Well, we're kind of okay with that. What state of mind is Sista Strings in? Shante, you first.
Oh, wow. What state of mind are we in? We are definitely so excited and so blessed. It's been an absolute whirlwind this past summer, let alone this past year. But the summer especially was just full of, like, pinch-me moments and bucket list venues and getting to play with some of our heroes. It's been an amazing time of growth and just being ready to meet the moment, you know, at any second. You never know what's going to happen.
Monique, what words are coming to you? How has it been out there?
It's been incredible. As Shante said, just being ready to meet the moment, but also finding that balance between touring and mommying, like sending my baby off to school this morning and helping with science projects and being like, oh, but I have to pack my bag and do laundry so I can go on tour. So it's been a lot of trying to find that balance while working my butt off and showing her that part as well.
I wonder if that comes through in your music, how you're having to really go in so many different directions. Do you hear that at all coming through in your art?
I honestly have never thought of that, but I guess I would say yes, because when we write, I mean, we write of things we know or mm-hmm. write of things we feel. I don't think we know how to create outside of our true and genuine, like, feelings or experiences. So I guess I would have to say yes.
Well, let's go into the first song. Let's play a little bit from the opening song on the new album, and then we'll talk a little bit more. The song is called Shenandoah.
Now, Shenandoah, I'm not to see. Away, 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 you rolling river, Shenandoah, I'm bound to leave you.
Away. Oh, Shante, I mean, you two are really carrying that rolling and surging with your strings. And, you know, you should introduce us here to Peter Mulvey, by the way, the voice track there on this, you know, incredible American folk song. How does it feel to play Shenandoah?
Yeah, Shenandoah is beautiful. It kind of feels like a prayer, I think, that we all have for our community and our country. I remember being like a small child and hearing the song for the first time. And when I was younger, there was always, you know, talking about America as a melting pot and how beautiful it was that our country had so many people from all over the world in it. And it was a place where we could come and freedom and all these beautiful things that as I got older, I kind of felt like, it kind of squashed that beautiful dream that I was told was. But this song and reaching back to a rich American song like this kind of reclaims that spirit of embracing diversity as opposed to tearing each other down, as we've had a way to do as a human race. This isn't just America, but so it's kind of like our prayer for seeing that. And it feels freeing. It feels like reconnecting in a different way with some hope, which I know we need. And Peter Mulvey, the voice y'all hear, is also a Milwaukee native. We met Peter about 6 years ago or so, and have been working with him ever since the last three years, more intimately in this live album that we put out earlier last year, and this project, Love is the Only Thing, that was out in August. So.
Yes. Monique, what comes up for you with Shenandoah and really finding a bit of a home in Americana music?
Absolutely. I like when we perform this song, and a lot of times Peter, he'll introduce us and it's like, this is a song for everyone. Like Ashanti, Spoke with Milk, whatever, all of that. This is a song for everyone, not necessarily like you don't really know who it's written by, but like classic American folk song, right? So when you're performing it, I feel like people all have their own experience with that song. And one thing I love about art and performing is finding that way to connect with people through music. While, I mean, if you've ever attended a Peter Mulvey and Sister Strings show, I think we're very vocal on our beliefs and where we stand with certain ideas. But to be able to do that in a way where people are able to connect and listen, and I don't know, I feel like it's done, he does that so beautifully in front of an audience, just like bringing everyone collectively together through song, you know?
I hang on the word, you describe him as an ally, and acknowledging that you are two Black women, he is a white man. How do you negotiate that?
We have a lot of conversations. Even I love our car rides, like looking forward to this trip coming up, because I mean, also with our drummer Nathan, who is also another beautiful white man, you know, and it's like the four of us, and we're in like different age realms and different parts of our lives, but open conversation with love and respect for each other, and having an open ear, I feel like having those conversations is so important. And we learn a lot from each other, as you know, just learn a lot from each other about beliefs and upbringing and like how to speak in whatever way you can identify with someone, to have that empathy and learn how to go forward from that. So honestly, it's a lot of lots and lots of conversations.
Yeah. And I'm sure that too comes out in lyrics, comes out in the music. Would a word describe you as well as an activist? Do you see yourself as an activist?
I initially had not put that label on me, I don't think, for until the past couple years when we still lived in Milwaukee. And it was like during all the protests and all those, and finding that our activism was showing up through music. And but I don't think it was until then that it was becoming more of an intentional thing. Even when it came towards our teaching, we're also music educators. And I feel like that in itself is a form of activism as well, with us being Black women who are classically trained, and like how important that is to be seen in this world for all children, not just children of color either, you know? So I'm like, I feel like in the past couple of years, we've started to embrace that, but that was not something that I had taken on as a title for myself until the most recent years.
Talking with Sister Strings, cellist vocalist Monique Ross there and violinist vocalist Shanti Ross, their latest album called Love is the Only Thing, joining up with their fellow Milwaukeean singer-songwriter guitarist Peter Mulvey. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Deep.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the Milwaukee native strings and vocal duo Sista Strings, Shanti Ross on violin, Monique Ross on cello. This is Her Name Was. That's from their NPR Tiny Desk submission this year. And their new studio album called Love Is the Only Thing. They collaborated with Milwaukeean singer-songwriter Peter Mulvey. Join in, 800-642-1234, Sista Strings, Shanti and Monique Ross. Stay with us. Let's talk about Her Name Was. Single released in 2019. Shanti, who and what is the song about?
Oh, this song is it's kind of about me and Monique kind of telling each other's stories and each other's verses in the first half of the song, and then kind of, or I think it's flipped, but we're telling each other's stories, and it's something that it's a tune that Monique actually started writing on her own. I was out of town, I believe, on a tour with the Sphinx Virtuosi, all Black and Latino string orchestra, conductorless, and so I was on tour with them at the time for about like 7 weeks. And Monique was in Wisconsin and had started working on this song, and we finished it when I came back. And I remember just the easy melody of it, how beautiful it was. It just opened the door to like these intimate lyrics. I saw a girl, her name was, she always smiled, it never reached her eyes, you know, just like that exhaustion that a lot of times, and hopelessness that a lot of times we all feel. And so while we were talking about each other, it became like kind of universal in this gorgeous way of just like human experience, you know. It just happened to be ours.
Monique, is that how it goes? You write music when Shanti's away and surprise her when she gets back?
Honestly, yes. I tend to start on a lot of things when I'm alone, because I will sing in the bathroom, and I have so many voice memos from Her Name Was. I actually started in the shower. I have a long voice memo of that song starting, and I listened to it not too long ago and was laughing because I just hear the shower, and that's like where I process a lot of things, or where I can create. So Shanti was, as she said, she was away on tour, and we had just recently moved in together, and was fresh out of a really tough relationship. And the line Shanti even just mentioned, she always smiled and never reached her eyes. I felt like that spoke so true to where I was then. It's like where you just keep pushing, you're pushing. You don't want anyone to like see the pain that you're actually feeling, because you don't want anyone to ask those questions, or you don't want to have to explain yourself, or you want to just like keep moving on like everything is fine. And that song kind of just like journeys through life, and with the chorus, it's just like keep moving on, keep holding on, keep holding on. So I guess that's kind of the premise of Her Name Was.
What did church have to do with how your music is today, and singing in church, and that era of your life as really young people? Shanti, do you want to field that?
Sure. Can you repeat that one more time for me, though?
Sure. How did coming up in church and singing in the church choir, how does that inform your music now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it definitely is dripping all up and through everything that we write and play, for sure. From just the harmonies and the storytelling of gospel music, I think those elements I really lean on in writing and performing, or even just how I listen to things. And I would say the same about Monique as well. We both got our start of improvising and using our ears to play rather than physically reading music in the church. And just the looseness of, you have to let go of some things in the gospel church that you can't in a symphony hall, for instance. So, like, if someone's feeling the spirit move a certain way, they're going to start a song that was maybe not on the praise and worship set list, you know? It's going to be whatever song that moment, and the band's got to be there, ready to jump in with the lead singer immediately, whatever key they're in, however slow or fast it goes. So I would say those aspects of being a musician, we really learned not in school, but in church.
Hmm. We're talking with Ashanti and Monique Ross from Sista Strings on their tour, on their music and their inspirations. You can join in 800-642-1234. I want to play another song on the album, and it's for 18-year-old Michael Brown. He was shot and killed by officers in Ferguson, Missouri, almost 8 years to the day of releasing your album. And the lyrics ask us to have compassion for his family and for the man who shot him down and for the marchers, for the neighbors.
One and all, and most especially for the next child, for the next child we know will fall. I know God loves us, I know God loves us, I know God loves us, I don't know how, I know God loves.
Monique, why is a song about compassion?
Oh, I have to say, the first time we heard the song, Ashanti and I had a conversation, because it is a beautiful song that Peter wrote, but it struck a nerve, because it is saying have compassion for someone who, or for people who are doing such like horrible and evil things in this world, you know, to people that look like me. But I think embracing it, it's in the end, we just did a thing in one of Brandy's songs, Stay Gentle. And when she spoke on it, it was something that I felt was very true. Also something that we grew up with. It's like forgiveness and having compassion is not necessarily for that person. It is for yourself. So that you are not hardened, so that you can think clearly, so that you can still continue to do what you are supposed to be doing. So you're staying gentle to yourself. You are having compassion for other people so that you can continue to help the world heal, you know? That was something I definitely wrestled with for a little bit.
Thank you so much for that. We have less than a minute left. And how about just a little therapy here? You two moved to Nashville, but, you know, I'm sure you're connecting with other musicians since moving to Nashville. But what does Milwaukee have that Nashville does not? Ashanti.
Oh, me?
Sure.
What Milwaukee has that Nashville does not? Oh, Milwaukee has a certain swag about it that is completely unique to Milwaukee. And I tell you, there's like a certain swag / community. It's like a little, we're like the Bad Kids Club or something. I feel like, you know, like the kids at the back of the bus that I like, that everyone's like kind of rolling their eyes at, but they're a little bit low-key jealous of because they're having a great time. Like, I love the music community, the artistic community in Milwaukee, and being part of that was an incredibly unique experience. And we've been having great community here in Nashville, but there's just nothing like that home community.
Nothing like the hometown. Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Ashanti and Monique Ross, Milwaukee natives, are musicians in their band Sista Strings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. News Update is next on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin has a reckless driving problem. Statewide traffic fatalities have increased every year since 2019. Towns and cities across the state are trying to reduce reckless driving in a number of ways, and that includes redesigning the roads themselves. But their options are limited on busy urban highways where state policies can override local priorities. Jonah Chester reports.
As a kid living along West Fond du Lac Avenue in Milwaukee, Tristan Thomas saw plenty of reckless driving. A police officer would park blocks away from his home to catch cars barreling down the road.
He would sit there for like 8 to 10 hours every day, pulling people over constantly because they're just flying down the street with no regard for anyone else.
Thomas is 40 and lives in Appleton now, but he's tragically aware reckless driving on Fond du Lac hasn't gotten better since he was young. On the morning of March 12th, his sister Dwinetta Thomas was making a left turn at the intersection of Fond du Lac and Congress Street. A driver in oncoming traffic hit her vehicle. She later died of her injuries.
It's still incredibly hard to believe that she isn't here. We'll have a messenger call where, you know, everybody's got the video cameras on and we're looking at each other, and then it's just, you know, you're waiting for her to come on, and it's like, oh, she's not. She's not coming on anymore.
Thomas says Fond du Lac Avenue looks essentially the same as when he was a kid. That's in spite of efforts to make change. The road runs northwest from downtown Milwaukee until it connects with Interstate 41 at the edge of the city. The municipal street is part of State Highway 145, making it what's known as a connecting highway. On roads like this, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation gets final say over any infrastructure changes. That includes traffic calming measures like narrowing pedestrian crossings and reducing lane widths to encourage drivers to slow down. WSDOT gives high priority to traffic flow when considering proposed changes. Advocates like Jordan Morales say that priority hinders new road safety projects. Morales is the vice president of Milwaukee's Sherman Park Community Association.
The Milwaukee Department of Public Works, they're more concerned, or becoming more concerned, with pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure, and they're actually more concerned about slowing cars down. So you've got kind of two competing philosophies.
A city report from 2019 found 16 of Milwaukee's 25 most crash-prone intersections sat on or near Fond du Lac Avenue or Capitol Drive, another state-connecting highway. And from January 2017 to July 2022, 42 people died in traffic collisions along the two roads. That's about 11% of the city's total traffic deaths during that time. Milwaukee officials say WSDOT has allowed some changes on connecting highways. Those include protected turn lanes, as well as concrete bumpouts and expanded medians to shorten crosswalks at busy intersections. But Gerald Krushke, Milwaukee's interim commissioner of public works, says WSDOT has rejected more ambitious proposals like narrowing or eliminating lanes.
I think they're starting to understand the needs that we have in the city, which is a good start. I still think we have a long way to go.
Stephen Flottmeyer is the planning chief for WSDOT's southwestern region. He says the department considers the needs of all road users when weighing new projects, but he acknowledges WSDOT typically approaches rural and urban highways with the same set of goals, which includes traffic flow.
The only difference is within the connecting highways, the city plays a much bigger part in the conversation.
Dwinetta Thomas's family is among those who would like to see that relationship evolve more quickly. Tristan says they think changes to make Fond du Lac Avenue safer could save families from what they're going through.
It's a gigantic loss for our family. It's a gigantic loss for the community in which she served, and we just have to make sure that nobody else's bright light gets snuffed out.
Dwinetta had moved to Sheboygan, but was still in Milwaukee often.
The day she was killed, she was actually dropping someone off at a store. So I think it's apropos that she was out helping someone, and then that happened. So she was definitely loved.
Dwinetta left behind two adult children and four siblings. Jonah Chester, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to family-owned restaurants and the fragility of the hospitality industry, weathering these times, carrying on the passion for making food that honors identity and culture. We talked recently with Wisconsin Restaurant Association Chair Danielle Bearwald, who's a restaurant owner herself, and had this forecast.
By the first of the year, we will see a significant uptick in closures of restaurants who are holding on and hoping that the holiday season makes or breaks the year.
Join in on working in this industry, your passion for cuisine, 800-642-1234. Anthony Gallardi is co-owner of Tavos Signature Cuisine in Milwaukee. Anthony, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. How is your small family restaurant faring in the ups and downs of the pandemic?
Well, we have had our struggles, definitely had our share of struggles, but we're pushing through and we keep working at it every day. It's a day-by-day challenge.
I would imagine when you run a business with family members, there are bound to be differences, and it's personal because it's your family. How do you handle that aspect of running a restaurant?
It's a little bit tough, but we've gotten used to it. Like I said, the idea of opening the restaurant as a family, pretty much that's where everything started. That's where everything came from. And it's been fun. It's been a challenge, definitely, like I said, with staff. Sometimes not having enough staff to challenge because you're there every day, so there's not a break for us in that sense. But we understand that's what it takes to keep the restaurant going and being successful. So it's definitely a challenge, I'll tell you that much.
Can you explain the role of your mother and father in the business?
Sure. So both of my parents are involved in the aspects of the kitchen, the recipes, the cooking, the prepping, and the creation of every dish. We all come together on a dish. We all agree on what goes on the menu, what comes off the menu, and how a plate should look.
It's your mother's recipes. Does she have the final say on what goes into these dishes?
Oh, no, not at all. We all do. So we all do. It's mainly her recipes. It's definitely, I'll tell you that much, it's 100% her recipes, and that's how we wanted it from the beginning. We definitely wanted to showcase my mother's cooking.
When did you realize that your mother's cooking was extremely special, was unique and different from other people's cooking?
Since I was a kid. Since I've had her food ever since.
Can you describe what makes it distinct? What makes it different?
I mean, aside from, everybody's always going to say their mom's cooking is amazing.
That's yes. Awesome.
No kid will ever say my mom's cooking sucks. that'll be interesting. It's the fact that I wasn't the only one that appreciates my mother cooking, and the family and friends. She would have multiple friends over sometimes for parties and gathering, and the high praise and compliments that she would get all the time. You start feeling that her food was so unique that a lot of people would love to come over to the house constantly just to be invited to the house.
And your restaurant is farm to table. What does it mean for you to use, grass-fed meat and heirloom vegetables in our recipes?
Oh my God, 100% cleanliness. To be able to say my food is 100% grass-fed and it's a farm-to-table, there's no comparison in it.
Why is there no comparison? Yeah.
Because for me, staying away from processed foods, staying away from all that, it's just not, it's unhealthy. I mean, I find it more healthy, beneficial. A lot of people complain about how the food sometimes, Mexican food sometimes is heavy, it's unsettling, it doesn't sit well with their stomach. We keep things very simple in that sense, minimal seasonings to let the food shine for itself. Like I said, we focus highly on authentic Mexican cuisine, not Americanized food. In that sense, I want to say more of a Tex-Mex style. 20 years ago, a lot of people would consider that to be authentic. That there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it wasn't authentic, you know. For what it's worth, Taco Bell is not Mexican food.
Hmm.
And a lot of people do believe that Taco Bell is 100% Mexican.
Some restaurant critics say that you've really paved the way for the rise of new Mexican cuisine in Milwaukee. How does that sit with you? What does that mean to you?
I definitely take it as a high praise. It makes me feel awesome to know that, you know, we have led the way for new restaurants and changed and started a trend and a movement basically in the new modern cuisine in that sense. And to stick to tradition in a way, of what real Mexican food is and showcase it nowadays. I want to say it's a little bit more acceptable in the sense that we have a lot more of the younger kids that are 3 or 4th generation Mexican American, or, you know, just Latin, that want to explore, you know, their roots and to help people reconnect with their own culture through, you know, through my food. It's amazing to be able to do that and give that to people.
We're talking with Anthony Gallardi, who's a restaurant owner in Milwaukee. Join in on Foodways and when culture and family recipes are behind dishes, and how your favorite restaurant is doing. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we discuss Foodways, passing down recipes from one generation to the next and bringing those recipes to life in a Milwaukee family-owned restaurant. It's story of a Mexican and Latin American restaurant owned by Anthony Gallardi called Tavos. Join in on your family-run restaurant story, how your family members share in the work of running the business and who does what in the restaurant. 800-642-1234. Chef Anthony Gallardi stays with us. Anthony, you know, before the height of the pandemic, your restaurant only took reservations and it could take months to get a table. How is the pandemic affecting your business now?
Hard. Heavily changed the whole concept of the restaurant. When we first opened, I want to say anywhere between 4 to 6 months in, it took us, I want to say close to 6 months to develop that reputation of, you know, word of mouth, a lot of marketing. We did at the beginning, we did high marketing on social media platforms, and we paid for a lot of high marketing advertisement at the beginning of the start back in 2018. And popularity grew so fast that all we could do was reservations at that point.
And then what happened when the pandemic struck? Oh, Anthony, are you still with us? I think we're having a connection issue with Anthony Gallardi. He's a restaurant owner in Milwaukee. The name is Tavos, named for his father, and Anthony is co-owner. We're trying to get him on the line. We're having a little bit of connection issues. Maybe you have a family-run restaurant that you are a part of. What is that business like? How has it been for you in the pandemic? Or maybe you go to a restaurant that you really love and you want to see it continue. How has it been? 800-642-1234. Anthony, are you still there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Sorry about the connection issues there. But, you know, as you said, in 2018, and as you got the business rolling, it was really fast. You really ramped up quickly. What happened in the pandemic, though?
So with the restaurant being so small and the building that we are, it really hurt our business in that sense. The restaurant is super small. We only have 4 to 5 tables in the restaurant that are 4 to 2 people sitting at a time. We did not have a patio available. So it really impacted the fact that COVID limited people, you know, to be able to sit next to each other. My place was, like I said, it's small, it's cozy, and people loved that feeling, the fact that they were next to each other. The fact that somebody would come in and order something familiar to them, really basic off the menu, and the table next to them would be willing to try something different, something that they've never had. And the plates started coming out from the kitchen. People would be like, oh my God, what is that? And they would start communicating with each other. Next thing you know, you started making friends. People started laughing. It was very family driven in that sense. And all of that changed with COVID. All of a sudden, when COVID hit, nobody wanted to be next to anybody. A lot of people were worried about contamination and getting talked to, or, you know, people were not wearing masks. You know, how was things being handled? So COVID changed a lot of things for us dynamically in the restaurant. And it was very drastic, too. So we switched over to a lot of carryouts, a lot of walk-ins. We tried reservations, paid reservations. That did not work out so well either, because people would still not show up for their reservations. And we started getting a lot of chargebacks. A lot of people, we would charge a minimum of $25 just to hold the table. And people would not show up and then file a dispute with their banks. So we figured, you know what, just let's not charge a minimum fee to make a reservation. Let's just not take reservations at all. So unless it's a large group, you know, that occupies pretty much my whole space, we will not take a reservation.
So you really don't know from one day to the next who might show up. And that can also lead to predicaments, I would imagine, with your ingredients. Have you been able to get the ingredients you need when you need those items?
So as far as my ingredients, we have not, thank God, we have not had the trouble of getting, you know, the stuff, because we do order with time. My distributors have always been on time. I have not had that hard of a problem getting certain ingredients here. We have always tried to order sufficiently enough to keep us afloat, you know, constantly. But it does... It does impact in the sense that sometimes it's a Friday night or a Saturday night and we're completely dead. It's empty. There's maybe one or two tables at a time. And there's other days where it's a Friday and Saturday again. And we're extremely busy. We'll be extremely busy on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday. So it's always a hit or miss. I do get that call every time. Hey, are you busy today? Or do you have a table open? That's a constant struggle when we used to be booked all the time and have reservations.
Right. Now you just raise your hands in the air. You know, your guess is as good as mine.
Correct.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the life of a small restaurant business owner, Chef Anthony Gagliardi, owner of Tavos Signature Cuisine in Milwaukee. You can join in on the restaurant business in these times, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Can you talk a little bit about the name Tavos, named after your father and your partner, I understand?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Oh,
I missed that question.
Can you talk a little bit about the name Tavos, which is named after your father and your business partner?
Sure. So the idea came from the fact that my dad wanted to open his restaurant. If he wanted, essentially, that's the reason I'm back here. I'm in Milwaukee. I started the restaurant with my father. He wanted to open his restaurant. He wanted to make it personal, and he wanted to reconnect with me in that sense. He wanted to make it a father-son, business. And the fact that he did not want to go any bigger was shocking to me at the beginning, honestly, because it's such a small building where we are. That's how pretty much the whole concept was so small. My dad said, hey, I want my restaurant. I want you to come help me, you know, build this restaurant. And I told him, he's like, well, Scott, you know, what name do you plan on giving it? And he had all these other names, you know, in mind. And I told him, well, why don't you make it more personal? It's your restaurant. It's your dream, it's your idea to have, you know, a restaurant. So let's make it very personal. And I remember my dad had, everybody has always called him Tavo. Ever since I can remember, they referred to him as Tavo or Mr. Mustache Guy because he has a huge mustache. So, you know, he's always the Mustache Guy or Mr. Tavo. And I was like, Tavo? I was like, Tavo, Tavo. That sounds, I was like, it's perfect. It's small, short. It's easy to pronounce. It's easy to remember. And that's how Tavos came. That's how we came up with the name.
That's a beautiful story. How has your relationship with your dad changed in this business venture?
It's great. We do, like I said, we do have our, you know, here and there a little bit of disagreements, but for the most part, it's awesome. It's better than ever, I want to say. We were able to bond back together 6 months in, and having the restaurant so busy, we bonded. It took my passion back to the kitchen. It's been amazing. It's been amazing for me.
Anthony, thank you for joining us. All the best.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Anthony Gagliardi is owner of Tavos Signature Cuisine in Milwaukee. Just ahead, we talk about how philosophy provides a path through personally difficult times. The new book is called Life is Hard. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.